Arf! Hounds of Heaven. Welcome back in to the David L. Gray Show. Off code and unscripted. It's about 5 o'clock here in Germany, and we are live streaming on the Facebook, on the YouTube, on the Twitter, but however you are listening and wherever you're listening from, just glad to have you here for this wonderful show to have for you today. I just got one monologue for you and one amazing interview with Father Lovell. And, you know, Father Lovell, he's always had been a big supporter of our apostolate, St. Dominic's Media. He's always been a friend of ours. So when I decided to kick this live stream back up, you know, I was asking, who should I have as like some of my first guests, right? And Father Lovell, he was number one because, like I say, he's always been a supporter, but also because we've never had a chance to have this conversation about what happened last year with the Coalition for Council Priests. And also because, you know, there was a lot to catch up on. You know, a lot had happened. And he and I, though I checked in on him from time to time, you know, as a friend should, I never had a chance to really have this conversation with him. Like, what happened? So I said, well, why don't we just have it in front of all our friends and all your supporters who used to come over to my platform to hear you talk? So that's what we're going to do. Also, I have a few comments about the new document that came out of the Castry for the Doctrine of the Faith, Infinite Dignity. So I wrote a really detailed essay about it at stdominicsmedia.com. So I encourage you to go read what I have to say in longer form. But based upon some of the feedback I was reading on social media and other places, I thought I might come in and talk about why I think some people are struggling with the document. So that's the two things we're going to do today. The monologue shouldn't take too long. But if you're impatient, right, or if you're watching the recorded one, just drop down into the description box. I should have some timestamps for you so you can bounce around and get around to where you need to be. So without further delay, let's go ahead and just get into the show. Really excited about it. Father Lovell will be here shortly. But let's get into a commentary that I have on Infinite Dignity. This is the David L. Gray Show, off code and unscripted. You know, I read the document that came out, right? And I have to tell you that when I read it, I was relieved in a sense that there's not really anything new in the document, right? Everything that was there, if you're a person who studies the catechism in the Catholic Church, you know, there was not anything new there. So that was a bit refreshing. All right. So that was my first quick scan of the document. Okay. Fernandez, the cardinal of the Castry for the Doctrine of Faith, the office which I've in the past I've called the disaster for the doctrine of faith, was true to his word. A little while ago, he's in an interview and he said, you know what? I'm not going to, you know, after the Fiducia Supplicans, the gay blessing document, which was panned universally, we can't call it a magisterial document because it's been flatly rejected by so many bishops. Even the Orthodox have rejected it. We can't call it a magisterial document, an official teaching document. Even Fernandez has said it's not applicable to everyone, right? He said, bishops, figure out how you want to apply it. Okay, so that's not how truth works, okay? But after that, he said, you know, future documents that's coming out of the Castry are going to be less controversial. And so I read this. I said, well, okay, well, he was true to his word, right? So that was my first just scan of it. And then I read it a second time. And then that's when Father Mark Goren came to mind when I read it a second time, because I realized what this document was. You know what it was?
This is a masterpiece.
I thought it was a masterpiece. Father Mark Goren was right, right? Not about Fiducia Supplicans, but what he said was a masterpiece, but this one.
This is a masterpiece.
Because I really thought it defended the Imago Dei, right? Simply not by adding anything innovative, nothing new, just by recapitulating, reiterating what the Catholic Church teaches. But I do want to go over a few things here about why I think people have caught this, you know, a lot of negativity is sort of, not a lot, but there's some quick reaction negativity surrounding this document. First of all, I think there's just a flat distrust of Pope Francis and of Cardinal Fernandez. Why? Why is there distrust? Because I don't think they've earned credit with us because of things in the past or the last 10 years of things they've done and things they failed to do. So we lean into a document immediately, and we lean in with bad intentions and distrust. We're looking for something wrong. It's very difficult for us to give Pope Francis and Cardinal Fernandez the benefit of the doubt because of the past. It's sort of like a husband or a wife looking for evidence that their spouse is cheating. You tend to find what you look for, right? And so that's the distrust, right? So that's the first reason I think we see some negativity surrounding this document and some quick reactions that aren't really detailed. But just, you know, hey, this is what I feel about the document, and I'm going to pick out this quick little thing that I don't like, right? The second issue is just because of study, right? You know, one of the principles of Dominican spirituality is that, you know, we're supposed to study, right? That's one of the principal pillars. I just don't think a lot of people spend a lot of time studying the Catholic Catechism or studying what the Church teaches. If we did, we would have noticed that there wasn't anything really new in this document. We may read some other catechism. We may even listen to Father Mike Smith's catechism a year, but do we really study what the Church teaches? For example, I'll point out this one thing. You know, a lot of people are struggling with the idea that human beings have infinite dignity, that our dignity is just intrinsic, it's immutable, we don't lose it. They thought this was just an innovation of the document. But as I say in my essay, I pull out paragraph 1730 from the Catechism of the Catholic Church, which says, God created man a rational being, conferring on him dignity of a person who can initiate and control his own actions. So this section of the catechism concerning how God filled us with this dignity, synonyms, worth, value, so that we might be free, that we might respond freely as we ought, because we have dignity, we have worth, we have value. Therefore, we're always capable, we always have the capacity to reflect him who created us. We always have this capacity to imitate Christ in the Beatitudes. We always have this capacity to respond to natural virtue, right? And this dignity, we can't lose. And because we cannot lose it, here's the problem, I think. And I think this is the crux of the issue, why people are leaning in with some sort of suspicion of this document, and why this document is what I believe is a masterpiece.
This is a masterpiece.
Because the document is very countercultural in this sense right here, at this sense of the rub. It's countercultural because we live in a society that we believe that people's dignity, their worth, their value are based upon material. That we believe that people are more valuable, they're worth more, they're more dignified if they have money, if they have degrees, based upon their status in society, what type of car they drive. It's these material things by which we determine value. And like this declaration says, is that, well, sometimes we'll look at the immigrants, or we look at the poor person, or we look at the person in prison, and we think they have less dignity because of their station in life, because of their actions. So here's the issue. We associate actions with dignity based upon how you've acted. You have more dignity, more value, more worth. Right. This is just the common milieu. This is how society works in the West and perhaps in other places in the world. We associate dignity, worth, value with your actions, the things you've accomplished. This is just secular society, how things work. We know this is a fact. But the Catholic Church is saying, no, your dignity is based upon your authorship, who created you, your image. Now, you have to think of this in context of, say, art, right? This is a good way to think about it. Think of something just completely ugly, like Jackson Pollock, something abstract, completely ugly. Well, some people will say it was abstract. I'm allowed to call it ugly. You could call it beautiful, but that's the problem, right? So art can be subjectively ugly, right? But that same piece of art is very valuable. Why? Not because of the way it looks, not because anything in it that acts, rather because of the authorship, who created it. That's where it gets its worth and its value. Or we could think about it like water, right? Water is always H2O. That's water, right? Hydrogen, oxygen, two parts oxygen, right? So it's always going to be water, no matter how dirty, no matter how polluted, no matter where it's at, no matter where we find it, no matter what it's being used for, no matter so-called actions. It always has the same value worth because of its convoluted compounds, right? Of what it is, right? So that's the second issue of why people, I think, struggle with the fact that the church teaches that because we are the Imago Dei, we have those things pertaining to the Imago Dei, right? And that our actions, regardless of what we do, we still are made in the image and likeness of God. And I think that's difficult, right? Especially in an ugly society, we don't want to think that the rapist, a child molester, is somehow still the image of God. Though diminished, though far from God, though separated from God, he's still who God created him to be as far as his ontological reality, right? He still has the same image. So there's some struggle there, and I get it. The second thing I think people are struggling with is just, I think some people just have not caught up for whatever reasons to the document issued by Pope St. John Paul II, Veritatis Splendor, the church's moral theology, and that represents the shift that the church made from scholasticism, their moral theology, to our moral theology that we're at today, with the principal distinguishing factor being that we believe that we can find that the gospels, the life of Jesus Christ, does have something to say about our morality, and that natural law does have something to say about our morality, that acts themselves for either good or bad, and that the human being is made to be a moral actor. And also a distinguishing feature from scholasticism is the idea, or the reality of truth, that the ends do not justify the means. Sometimes you look at scholasticism, they'll say that, well, based upon how that thing ended, we can then determine whether act itself and intentions of the acts were good. So this has a lot of problems. You could probably think of some, such as, oh, rape. Oh, so woman was raped. But the child conceived turned out to be a really good king, right? And so some would say, well, man, maybe that rape wasn't so bad, right? This is the problem when we say the ends can justify the means. But the church in Veritatis Splendor saying, no, the ends never justify the means. We have to look at the moral act itself. Also, we have to look at the intentions, because sometimes a bad intention can ruin a good act. So morally good acts, such as walking an old lady across the street, right? Everyone would say, oh, good. But what if the intentions is vainglory? Well, that diminishes, that takes away the moral good of the act itself, because it's about that person. So you can have a bad intention. Now, so when it comes to like challenging things that I think this document is pushing forward with this rub with scholasticism versus the church's moral theology now, when it's pushing forward ideas that I say, again, are not new, but we can find in the catechism, maybe not what the church is saying about just war, and we need to get into that. But when it's talking about this document, Infinite Dignity, when it's talking about continuing to advance this path that the church has been on for about, say, the last 80 years, since a little bit before 1960, that the death penalty is inadmissible. I think that's a rub, I think, with scholasticism versus the church's moral theology now. Because if you do look at some scholastic thought, even Thomas Aquinas, he would sometimes point to the ends. Well, say, well, the person on death row, maybe they'll have a conversion. Well, the church said, well, that's the end. The Imago Dei, can we kill the Imago Dei? Right? Are we Jews? Are we going to kill God or not? Right? The church is saying no. Even the tension associated with killing the Imago Dei, right? Anger, vengeance, retaliation. We say, well, no, Jesus repudiated all those things. So we can't say those are good intentions for employing the death penalty. Perhaps punishment. Punishment may be measured. If it's measured, it could be just, perhaps, right? So if punishment is the moral act, well, then we have to go to the intentions, right? The intentions we'll say the moral act itself is punishment, right? That's what we're doing. Now we have to call that an intention. Well, the intention is to punish this person for what they did. Fine. If the moral actions associated with that are truly just punishments, right? It's like just taking your child's phone, right? You take a phone from a child nowadays, that's torture, right? So we can say punishment could be a good intention, but it can't be killing the Imago Dei. So I think that's challenging, right? Especially if you're holding on to scholasticism. Another one is the just war. Now, look for in the future, there's going to be a document coming out of the DDF calling the death, the just war theory inadmissible, right? It's going to call war inadmissible. Why? Because this whole thing has to become consistent. And that's where it looks like they're headed. Now, when it comes to just war, and I wrote a longer essay about this as well, that what the church is looking at now, there may have been a time when we could say wars were just, right? You know, you're thinking of the Vandals, the Gauls, you know, invading Rome and this type of thing. But consider war today. War today is no longer that. War today is really a corporate venture. It's a transfer of wealth. It's taking your tax dollars and giving them to the elites. It's giving war today is not being fought by people who, people like you and I, so to speak. But war today is being arranged, is being managed in boardrooms such as Vanguard, BlackRock, State Street. That's war today. It's a corporate line item, right? And the church sees that. It recognizes for what it is. It looks like Boeing and all of these. The war industry itself, that's what war is. War is Joe Biden getting rich, right? The Democrats getting rich. Sometimes the old school Republicans like Cheney and those guys getting rich off of war. This is war is. War is a corporate line item. It's an investment in making more money, right? By oppressing people, making poor people poor so that the rich can get richer. Now, so look for that document. And this is where I want to wrap it up with. What I find really troubling about this document is that in the past, the CDF or the Holy Office of Inquisition have been used to defend the faith. Now today, look at the Holy Office or the Castry for the Doctrine of Faith. It has some elements where it wants to defend the faith. It's recently wrote that document against Freemasonry, you know, supporting church teaching, fine, defending the faith. But notice how Pope Francis is using the DDF now. It's not to defend the faith, just, but it's also to proclaim the faith. This has become an office of proclaiming the faith. It's been like a co-magisterial office where Fernandez writes the document, Francis signs it. This type of thing in the past had been done in encyclicals, apostolic exhortations, papal bulls, where the Pope proclaims the faith. But now how he's using the DDF to proclaim the faith, to advance it, and sometimes his agenda, such as in the Fiducia Supplicans, this is very interesting to see how it's going to play out. And I have some concerns about that. But also my thoughts about the infinite dignity to the document. For more, hop over to St. Dominic's Media, check out my longer essay on it, and tell me what you think. For now, let's end this conversation and get into the meat of our show today, which is our conversation with Father Lovell. He'll be on right after this quick break. This is David O. Gray Show, Off Code and Unscripted. Hey, Hounds of Heaven, if you like this content, please become a premium member at St. Dominic's Media. That's St. Dominic's Media. Become a premium member of St. Dominic's Media for just $10 and help us expand and add more staff and partners so we can fill the void in Catholic media of apostolates who are encouraging the faithful to live out who, what they have received in the liturgy of the Mass, and also to help us report on those things in the world that you need to be aware of, no matter which side of the ideological spectrum it happens. So please go to saintdominicsmedia.com. Also, while you're there, take a look at our life-changing pilgrimage. We are inviting you to join us on from September 30th to October 10th, 2025. This is the Dominican Marian Pilgrimage, where we will embark on a spiritual journey of a lifetime, traversing the sacred paths of St. Dominic de Guzman's life. From September 30th to October 11th, 2025, join fellow pilgrims in an enriching exploration that spans the historic cities of Madrid, Segovia, Palencia, Santo Domingo, Avila, Lourdes, Notre Dame, and many other cities. We're going to immerse ourselves in the most incredible and enriching spirituality in our faith, which is Dominican spirituality. It's going to be amazing. So please join us. Find out more about this at saintdominicsmedia.com and please become a premium member today for just 10 bucks. Thank you. Jesus loves you. God bless. This is Off Code and Unscripted, David L. Gray. Father Lovell, thanks for coming back on the platform, man. Really appreciate it.
Well, I'm glad that you're bringing the platform back. And, you know, I just want to say, since all of this unfortunate business has taken place since August, I really appreciated your support and many others. I told you before we went on air today, it's situations like this where you learn who your friends are. And it is a wonderful experience to see so much outpouring from those that want to support priests. And for me personally, it was the outpouring of support from canceled priests when this started, and them not staying silent, which was wonderful. But with that said, if we could start with a prayer, in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Ghost, amen. Holy Mary and all the saints, intercede for us with the Lord our God, so that we may merit his help and salvation, who lives and reigns forever and ever. Amen. In the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Ghost, amen. So,
man, it's so good to hear you pray again. Really, I really miss you. You know, you over time, when everything happened and you started your apostolate, you became our father, and we had always a close attachment to you, and we appreciate everything you've done. And so I like to get into that, because a lot of us, and I think there's even some comments in here now, I think Christine says, you know, I was so heartbroken when the news came out from the Coalition for Canceled Priests. So I prayed for all priests, plus they're helping them. I will always pay for a priest. So I'm happy to hear from Father Lovell tomorrow. She posted it yesterday. And so I want to start here. I kind of want to know what's going on with the Coalition for Canceled Priests, as much you can tell us, because I was over at their YouTube channel, and from time to time I check, because I link some of my old videos, and you interviewed me like three times. And so I always link the conversations I've had about Freemasonry back to another page at St. Dominic's Media. And so I'm just checking the links, make sure some interviews are still up. And I noticed that all the interviews you had done with me over the Coalition for Canceled Priests are gone now. And I know some others as well. So what's going on there?
It was news to me. You emailed me this morning and said, it doesn't seem like our videos are up anymore. And I do check from time to time, because even though the board suspended me in August, they kept my videos up. They kept Hope in the Desert up. And I know a lot of people are hoping that I get my podcast up and running again. I am seriously considering it. I have a lot on my plate right now. One, I'm back working in the restaurant industry in order to make a living. So it's finding the time. Also, I am not very technologically advanced. And to have somebody that could be able to produce it would be awesome. I mean, I see what you do with your show, and I'm just like, how does David do this? I mean, you're throwing ads in, you got a nice border. I mean, you have everything, and you're doing this all from Germany. So it's very good to see. But you know, I when you finally said to me this morning, the videos don't seem to be up, I did go over there. Now, some of my videos are still up, but it looks like they're starting to take them away, which is quite sad. I had an interview with Father Maudsley. It was one of my last podcasts. Mm-hmm. And I had priests, not just lady, priests say that that was one of the best podcasts they ever heard. And, you know, I was very proud of the work that we were doing. Why I was removed is just baffling. First and foremost, we had, as any young organization has, growing pains. We were founded in June of 2024. I was one of the co-founders. We immediately had a few board members who wanted to take more of a political active role. In fact, I remember you came out to our Lincoln Park event in downtown Chicago. Sadly, that was a disaster. We poured a lot of money into it and very few people showed up. I think our speakers were very good. And so we made a decision, Craig Holly and I, what path do we want to go down? And we did not want to be activists. We did not want to be pseudo politicians. We wanted there to be support priests. And we wanted to make sure that priests were given the opportunity to be priests. And we brought on an executive director, treasurer, CPA, all of that, all things that are needed, especially for a 501c3. And I was always trying to take a back seat so I could start a podcast, I could have the podcast, I could do more priestly work and not worry about certain things. And we were also trying to find a home for priests like myself who did not have anywhere to live. And, we would go through different things and we would try different things out, like having smaller events around the country. Some of those were very successful. Some of those were not. And, what I started to notice, because I was the only board member that was not a layman, was that the board really didn't know what to do in regards to, one, running a 501c3, which is different than a small business, and two, and I include myself in that, by the way, and two, would always be worried about, well, what would the bogeyman think of all of this? It was always this straw man argument that was brought up. Well, we better be careful because otherwise we're going to get criticized for this, that, or the other.
Okay.
And my main mission was to always make sure that we stayed in the black, which we did, and to always make sure that we try to get to the point where we have monthly budgetary reports and we're able to do this. Now, I made a mistake last spring. I thought it would be a good idea to bring Father Altman on the board. And the reason why I did this is because Father Altman is an attorney, which he likes to tell everybody, that he has worked in finance, that he has all of these degrees. Well, great. But he also has that side to him, which we saw sadly at the conference in June, where he can go off the rails and he can be, and you confronted him on this, and so did several others, and several of our speakers confronted him on this publicly. He could be a little harsh, and I shouldn't even say little, he could be very harsh. And, it got to the point where I am totally fine with somebody not believing that Pope Francis is Pope, as long as you have a reasoned argument. I'll give you Patrick Coffin as an example. He gives a reasoned argument. I don't necessarily agree with him because, one, I mean, I really don't know. When people ask me, do you think Pope Francis is the Pope? I don't know. There's a lot of confusion. You talked about that in your monologue. I say, I don't know. But I also know that it's way above my pay grade, and I don't have the authority to depose a Pope. It's as simple as that. But I'm fine with having the conversation with people, but when you start moving over to the violence aspect, of the millstone and throwing him in the Mediterranean, and they're trying to say, well, that's what Jesus said. Well, no, if you look at what Jesus says with the metaphor of the millstone, he's actually not saying come out and actually kill sinners. He wants sinners to convert. Okay. And we have to keep that in mind. And so you know, I brought these two on, and Father Altman, who's taking this very extreme stance, it is sedevacantism. I know people like to say, well, it's not really sedevacantism because he believed that Benedict and John Paul were pope. If you believe the seat is empty, you're a sedevacantist, okay? Mm-hmm. You want to qualify it after that, I'm completely fine with that. There are different shades of sedevacantism. Also, the term is only about 60 years old, 50, 60 years old. Let's not dive too much into breaking down a word that's really not that old. And then we had the other position on the board where it was basically, well, we got to be careful that we don't upset the bishops too much. Yeah. And so you had these kind of what I thought at first competing things. And so when Tom and Father Altman came on shortly after Easter last year, they asked me, would I be willing to step off the board? Because I was collecting a paycheck. I was doing 40 to 60 hours of work easily, more than that, actually, every week. As you well know, doing a podcast takes up a lot of time, but it wasn't just the podcast that I was doing. And I said, yes, I'll be more than happy to do that, whatever will advance it. And then what I started to notice after Easter last year, after I left the board, I was being kept more and more out of the loop. And, you know, it was to the point where I was having committee members, like for the conference, getting very upset because they weren't being consulted. It was becoming a very closed organization. And finally, I was told in August, never given anything in writing, I was told in August, well, there's a bit of complaint by one of the contractors against you. And I said, well, was this a sexual nature? No, it's just, you know, you clearly... don't work well with others. And so we're going to suspend you without pay. And I don't know much about employment rights, but I know enough where suspension without pay to do that immediately before any investigation is done is a little extreme. Yeah. And, you know, the priests immediately, a lot of the canceled priests rose to my defense. You were on that email list that they sent out. They first and foremost tried to address it with the board. The board refused to speak to them. Then they brought it to a few others like yourself, following Matthew 18, verse 15 and following. And they finally appointed a priest who's also an attorney, a relatively new attorney, in order to do the investigation. And we're waiting and we're waiting. And I have a lawyer. And we even told the investigator, hey, I'll be willing to come up and meet with you face to face. I want to get this resolved. I want to get back to helping priests. And I was never spoken to. And, you know, the board is trying to say, well, he texted you a bunch of questions that you never answered. Well, one, I never received the text. But even if I did, that's not how you, as an investigator, as an attorney, as my attorney said in his statement, that's not how you ethically work. You know, you knew I had an attorney, you work through him. And I'm sorry, ladies and gentlemen, any investigator worth his salt, the person investigated said, I'm going to come and meet with you face to face and I'm going to pay for it myself. You should be jumping for joy for that. Why don't you want to see the person face to face?
Yeah.
And so on December 1st, I got a call from my attorney. I could tell he was angry. He says, yeah, they fired you. And you have to be out of the house by December 31st. That's when the priests went out and basically released their statement, about four or five of them. There's several other canceled priests that also have my support. They were quiet about it, though. And it was from there that we just started to have basically the battle of the statements. I came out with a statement. Father Altman came out with a statement. The board came out with a statement. The board tried to distance itself from Father Altman's statement because, to be honest with you, Father Altman basically put the potential of a libel lawsuit around the board's neck. And so they're trying to distance themselves from that. We are looking into all my legal rights as possible. And then what was very interesting at the beginning, at the end of December, early January, I was refusing to leave. Both the priestly assistance coordinator, Father Scott Duvall, and our investigator, our internal investigator for the priests, resigned over how everything was being done because all priests, including myself, had to go through background checks. And we had a very thorough and a very good system for doing that. And they seemed like they were being pushed out. And now if you go on the website, what you see from the coalition, which has done very little in the last several months, is you have just this laundry list of things that you have to go through. And ladies and gentlemen, I encourage you to go just see what they are requiring of priests to submit. They want to know who your spiritual director is. They want to know, they want to see psychological reports if there are any. Okay. I'm surprised they don't say, please list any or all mortal sins you've committed in your entire life. You know, and I'm sorry, there's one being thorough, and then there's one where you're being so overcautious. It's clearly written by, these questions are written by an attorney, is that they are geared in order to protect the board as much as possible. Because God forbid we help a priest by mistake that actually did something wrong. And by the way, I agree with that. We were always the type of organization that was helping priests who did not commit a serious crime. And so that's where we are with that. I got to take a moment here just to catch my breath and see if you have any questions for follow-up.
Yeah, thanks for that timeline of events. I think a lot of information, a lot of us did not know. For example, I did not know that you had stepped down from the board. So that was, let me just recap the timeline, and then I have a question. So around April, I think you said.
Correct.
You had stepped down from the board. But before that time, you had decided to bring Father Altman on the board and correct, someone else. There seems to be a culture within the organization that always seems to be a bit tepid, a bit afraid of various things. And then without notice, just seems to be out of the blue that you hear about some sort of contractor has a problem with you, and there's no sort of remedy that's in place or any sort of dialogue with you or any sort of real investigation before they suspend you without pay. And this is around August. And so then around December 1st, you finally hear back from your lawyer that, you know, yeah, they fired you. You have to get out of the house by December 1st. Now, 31st. Now, you talked about the letters that are going back and forth. One of them, I have one comment, then one question. Yes, the letter that was sent out by Father Altman, I even told Kaylee, I think I emailed her, and I told her that was completely unprofessional. I was just put back. I posted it on my Facebook page because I have been posting all the letters. Because again, people who follow me, I had encouraged them to support Coalition for Cancer Priests, support you. I have been with the coalition from the beginning. So it was an organization I believed in. All right. And so when I got this, so I'm posting all this stuff on my Facebook page, and I see that letter from Father Altman, I'm disgusted. First, that a priest would speak that way. Second, speak that way about his own brother. He was saying things in there such as, I'm not going to use exact words. I don't have it before me, but he said, this guy, Father Love, he was just a waiter when we, you know, he's a waiter. Like, as if that's some sort of thing that took away your dignity, your worth, your value. He's a waiter before he came to this. He had no sort of business experience. I'm a lawyer. It seemed a lot of vanity and a lot of just tearing you down without building you up. And then came, you know, the comments about all the management, so-called bad management you have been involved with the board. I mean, with the organization. I was disappointed because I've been on boards. I've led organizations. And I understand the weaknesses in myself. I've never been a great manager. Right. I've been more successful when I've been able to lead. I've been able to create structures, and I've been able to get people to buy in and go along with something. Right. That's just my strength. When it comes to management, making calendars, budgets, let's hire somebody for that, everybody. But he had pointed this out, that you had some weaknesses as well, that you weren't an experienced accountant. You weren't an experienced lawyer, that you hadn't done all these things. And I'm like, well, if the board had known this, why didn't they get him support and help? Because Father Lovell is a great visionary. He's a great leader. He has the same type of charism as I do. He brings people in. He motivates them. That's who he's not the daily manager. He's not the accountant. You're supposed to. That demonstrated me a failure on a board. His letter, Father Altman's. It was just a complete
Could I interject? Yes. For a moment? Also, bear in mind, by the time December came, they moved the goalposts. No longer was we have a contractor who has a complaint against you, which, by the way, in August and not since then, and my lawyer put this out in his statement, not once did they offer a personal improvement plan, a PIP. That was never offered, ever. There was never put in writing. I asked for the minutes of the meeting where they suspended me, never received a copy of it. They never sent me a copy. All right. I mean, they basically started to act like the bishops. Now, some might say, well, that's what good lawyers do. Well, we're supposed to be Catholic. Okay. But they moved the goalposts where no longer is it there's a problem with the contractor and, you know, employment things. Because, you know, I mean, to be honest with you, I am 6'4". Okay. Some would say that I'm abrasive of what I want to be. I mean, you saw me at the conference. I can silence a room when I need to. Okay. There's a good side to that. There's a bad side to that. I know that. All right. I know my faults. I always try to work on them. I hope we all do. Okay. And I'm certainly not perfect, but that was kind of forgotten to, well, Father Lovell didn't know what he was doing. Well, wait a second. I hired an executive director at the behest of the board. I didn't know the man beforehand. Okay. Brought a treasurer in. We had at first what was supposedly a really good CPA firm located in Illinois. They fell flat. Finally got an excellent CPA in there, Matthew Pleasy, who was putting together the finances, okay, and was putting forward a vision financially for us. And bear in mind, we were always in the black. We never had a loan. We never had a mortgage, you know, nothing. And, he's finally putting this together. So I bring on Father Altman and Tom in order, and again, it was a mistake on my part, in order to give us this HEF. And, you know, the first thing is, well, we got to be careful. So, Father, you know what? You're collecting a paycheck. Either be on the board and do not collect a paycheck. Well, by the way, continue working 60 hours a week or get off the board and get paid. Okay. And I need to make a living. I get 1700 gross for my diocese a month. Man, that wow. After taxes doesn't even cover rent. And what's amazing is that so many people want to put out there, well, $1,500 should be enough for you to live on. It's not. I'm sorry. It covers rent. And in Illinois, it's not a really nice place at $1,500. All right. Or Indiana even, you know, so it's just like, if I'm working, I mean, if we're going to talk about Catholic social teaching, you know, which seems to be everybody wants to talk about, is that you should get paid for your work. All right. And I wasn't getting paid a lot. And that was one thing that, you know, Father Altman would say, well, he was living large. I was collecting $51,000. I had several people, including our CPA at the time, Matthew Pleasy, including a couple of lawyers, say, Father, you're really underestimating yourself. But I said, you know what, though? Even though I didn't take a vow of poverty because I'm not a religious priest, you know, I'm going to still try to act humbly. There's a reason St. John Vianney is behind me right now and was behind me when I was doing my podcasts, okay? Because priests should live a simple life. To be honest, I think all Christians should be living a simple life. That's what we're called to. You know, so, you know, when they said, well, you should really do that, I said, okay, even though I knew on 501c3s that many board members collect a paycheck, all right, I said, that's fine. I will step off the board. And, you know, they started to keep things from me. And I would say, why are you keeping me out of the loop? Oh, it's to protect you. It's to protect you. And Father Duval said this, and he's right. It was basically a coup d'etat in the making. And that's what happened. But notice, nothing's happening now with the coalition. Father Altman does have his own 501c3, Blood of Martyrs. Go over there. Where's the mission statement? What is he doing other than the fact that it's a 501c3 that people could donate money to him? Okay. Again, I'm not trying to be critical. I'm just showing everybody the facts. You know, I mean, Father Altman has made a lot of money off of the last few years, and I'm not begrudging him or anyone for that. But then to turn around and say, well, you're the one living large.
Yeah.
Sorry. I don't buy it.
Yeah. I think most people who know would know that. I mean, there was between you and him, there's one person about a house for, you know, himself and his family. So, but when it comes to, so there was one email that came out, I think from the coalition, And I think they want to defend themselves. And they said that they sent you a list of questions. One of those questions was, and it seemed like the type of questions you would ask a person before you hire them or something. It was asking, how long have you ever been in charge of a board, or what's your experience in accounting? What was that questionnaire? Give us the background of that questionnaire.
I don't have it in front of me, and I didn't see it until they put it out there. Again, you know, they're claiming, oh, well, we texted it to you. Well, sorry, you knew my attorney. You knew my attorney's email. You knew my attorney's phone number. You knew my email. You should have sent it through him. We were willing to meet in person, and you refused. And then to turn around and say, and I, you know, a lot of the questions, it more seemed like a psychological makeup that they were doing. In fact, I had a lot of people rise to my defense, including the priests, demanding, that was their December 1st letter, was saying, look, we sent in our questionnaires. They received it from the investigator, again, via text or via email, and, you know, basically defending me. And had several people do that. And to see, you know, that not to get to the nitty gritty, most of the people, they thought that was just a questionnaire that was going to lead up to a follow-up, like to a phone call to say, all right, well, you said this, what do you mean by that? There was none of that, but by those that were either supporting me or, as far as I know, detracting me. Nothing like that happened. So when I tell people, look, I have no idea if an investigation actually happened because we were never given the final report of the investigation. We weren't given any report. We weren't told anything other than it's done. And the board has decided to part ways with me without a severance. And it's the same board that offered a very hefty severance to another employee. All right. Nothing. Mm-hmm. They just said, get out of the house. Oh, by the way, get out of the house during the Christmas week. All right. And that's what Father Duval said. No, I'm the property manager. You know, I am the one that determines if a priest needs to be here. There's a reason that this is for it. And, you know, he wrote up, as property managers have every right to do, a lease and gave it to me. But the problem is that in Northwest Indiana, you know, it's hard to find a job where I can make money. And again, when I say make money, it's not, you know, to live large, it is in order to pay the bills. All right. I decided to move out. They did extend the date that I had to be out to March 31st. By the way, does everybody remember what March 31st was this year?
Easter.
Nobody's on the board paying attention to the Catholic calendar. It's just like, you know, kick me out at Christmas, then you kick me out at Easter. And now I hear that they're selling the house, that's their plan. Wow. And it's sad because a lot of people gave for that with the right intention. And I was always up front. You look at, and again, they're removing evidence on my show of where I put, this is our mission. This is what we were doing, you know, and I was being told, now that I was off the board, like I was being told by Tom Oglesby, the current president, I was being told at the conference privately, you know, well, we got to get back to the mission. And I said, Tom, what makes you think I don't know what the mission is? I wrote the mission. I'm the founder. I'm the co-founder. I know exactly what the mission is. And now what you see with the coalition, David, is that it's all about, well, just emergency help. Emergency help. That's what we're having. Determined by us, the board. We're only doing emergency help. You can see that on the website. And that was never the plan. The plan was always be, we wanted to make sure that canceled priests could live as priests. Okay. Now, I realize that there is a segment of population out there that think, look, you know, go out there and get a regular job. All right, that's what I've done. I've done that for over 10 years now. I don't necessarily disagree with that. But I'm sorry, when you have priests that are nearing retirement, that are canceled, have no funds, to say, well, you know, go out, be a garbage man, go out, be a server. You know, it's kind of hard to do that. I wanted to make sure that priests that were canceled were able to have the means to live, to eat, and again, not extravagantly, just they don't have to worry about where the next meal is coming from. And not only that, ongoing formation. You know, doctors, lawyers, they have to take classes from time to time to keep up with their licenses. Okay, everybody understands that. Priests need that too, all right? And to be able to say, hey, look, you don't know Latin very well, all right, we're going to send you to a Latin class. All right. And a lot of priests appreciate that. You want to go work on your doctorate? We will help you go and earn a doctorate. Okay. So you can teach, because that's what that's one of the offices of priests is to be a teacher, yeah. to be an elder, you know. So that they've completely gotten away from that, at least from everything that they're putting out there, which is very little.
2023 was, I think, a tough year as well. We saw with Father Pavone, what happened with him, with the priest for life. What would then happen to the Coalition for Council Priests, and then everything that surround what happened with Michael Voris and Church Militant. And one thing I comment about with all this with Church Militant, one of the best things they're able to do for us was to make us aware of a lot of things that are going on with the bishops that lay people just would know. They had investigators, they had researchers. Coalition for Council Priests, as much good that you did for your brother priest and helping them in times in need, being sort of like, you know, an agency, you know, just being there for people, helping them with financial needs, attire, whatever. One thing that you did well, like Church Militant, was make us aware of when a priest or bishop was being canceled. I used to issue press releases, and you had your podcast, and just that information I think is missing as well. I don't know what the coalition is doing now. You say they're doing emergency help. We just don't hear. And so I'm looking at this. Who won? I don't know. You know, you can maybe talk about, you know, a year from now what this whole movie was about. Why, you know, I remember you said a moment ago that it was a coup d'etat. Okay. But who won? You know, I'm looking at Church Militant now. We don't have any news. Nothing is going on. Well, definitely the bishops won. They're like in the clear now. They're like when Batman is down, right? In Gotham, all the criminals just running wild, right? And the same with the Coalition for Council Priests. I think the bishops won. Whatever happened, whatever reason why it happened, this whole coup d'etat, this whole plot to get you out, and I think you're an amazing leader. You did amazing things. This whole thing was however it's engineered, for whatever reason, I think the bad bishops won, because now they don't have an agency, an organization like yours pushing back against the evil that they do when they cancel priests for no good reason.
Well, I mean, to be honest with you, thank you for that, by the way. You're going to make me blush so much that I'm going to get a sunburn. But, you know, our mission, as I saw it, was not to go out and attack, was not to be activist. And now I think valid criticism could be leveled against CM at the time. You know, now we look back and we see all the problems that they had. Yeah. And you know, that there was some uncharity. We always try to do things with charity, at least when I was there. And I'm sorry, I had every single speaker, with maybe the exception of Father Altman, at our June conference last year, just tell me how they thought that was an excellent conference. And it was. We had a great lineup. And by the way, we had a great lineup of speakers that don't necessarily agree with each other. Yeah. All right. And I find it sad, if you don't mind me bringing this up, I find it sad when I see some of the speakers at the conference kind of go after each other for little things. All right. I mean, you know, the latest thing, at least that I saw, was, you know, between Kennedy Hall and you. Okay. I would like to see some type of healing with that. I would love to see a great debate. I'll host it. I mean, let's bring Kennedy Hall on and David L. Gray. You know, maybe that's how we kickstart Hope in the Desert again. And to say, gentlemen, you have two opposing opinions. Let's try in charity to find an answer together. Because that was the whole point of the conference, you know, a house united. You know, say, you know, we could disagree on these little things. Yes, you know what? And we could disagree even on things like the death penalty. You know, can the current pontificate or John Paul or Benedict abrogate centuries of church teaching when it comes to the death penalty? You know, I mean, some say yes, some say no. You know, it'd be great to talk about. You know, can with a stroke of a pen, can you get rid of a rite of the church, the traditional Roman rite? You know, I mean, those are things that I would love to discuss and have debates about. You know this because you've been with me at the conferences and you've been pretty much to all of our conferences. I love having a rousing conversation. I don't know if that's the Italian in me or what, you know, but what happens is when we get off the rails and we say, well, you have to do it my way. And this is the only way. And my way is the best way, or my way is the Catholic way. And it's sad. And I'm going to get a lot of flack from this. I think you're going to get a lot of flack from this, because some people that follow Father Altman, excuse me, all right, he could do no wrong. And anything he says is just coming down from heaven, all right? And I'm sorry, but that screed that he wrote against me, that is not how you handle a situation in a professional way. Right. And what's sad is so many people are saying, well, thank God he came out and clarified this, and thank God he is making sure that everything is running smoothly at the coalition. We barely could get him to board meetings when we finally got him onto the board. I mean, I'm assuming since August he's on there more, but, you know, it's just he did very little at first and when he came onto the board. And again, I'm not being critical. Board of directors don't necessarily run things. That's why we had an executive director. That's why we had a CPA, you know, but they got rid of that. And again, I said this earlier, I want to say it again. Kudos to Matthew Pleasey for the work he did. Kudos to Father Duvall and to our priestly assistants investigator. They were doing excellent work and they were basically shown the door. And it's quite sad. But I would like to, because a lot of people, including the priests, want me to start up another organization, basically continuing the work of the coalition. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to try, you know, I'm certainly praying about it to see if the Holy Ghost is sending me that way. But I would like to see an organization to get back to the roots to help priests be priests. Okay. You want to believe, I'm not saying you personally, David, I'm saying to the audience, anyone in the audience wants to say, well, a priest should just, you know, roll up his sleeves and pull his boots up by the bootstraps to go out and get a job. Perfectly entitled to that. Not all priests can do that. By the way, I am doing that. You know, but I want to make sure that priests can live a spiritual and prayerful life and not have to worry where their next meal comes from or worry about if they're going to have a place to sleep. Always keeping in mind what Christ says, the Son of Man has no place to lay his head. I completely understand that. And nowhere as a priest, sometimes we have to accept that we might go without a meal, that we might go without having a place to sleep certain nights. I am not unaware of what Christ is calling all of his priests to do.
Yeah. And I appreciate that, Father, and especially what you said about, you know, I do draw some lines, right? You know, I think you see me draw certain lines when somebody says kill Pope, drown Pope. And I do draw certain lines when, you know, certain segments of our church, you know, would say that the, you know, Novus Ordo is a grave occasion of sin. That, you know, that's just like, I'm happy to debate that, but, you know, that's just what. You know, killing babies in a womb. There's just certain lines with me I get very angry about. But you're right. Everybody could do better. Do you still hear from, like, priests who are being canceled, like, personally?
Every day. To you? Every day we hear about priests. Fortunately, we have a very good network of priests. And bear in mind, that screed that Father Altman wrote not only went after me, went after the priests. You know, that we were all living large, you know, and it's like, no, sorry, we weren't. You know, we were trying to bring about something that we knew was going to be attacked. We knew we were going to be attacked by this, and we were attacked in several different ways. I did. If you would have told me a year ago this is how it would have progressed, I would have said, you don't know what you're talking about. And I'm amazed at it. But, you know, it's just to keep that fraternity going and to open people up. You know, I mean, I don't like getting into the liturgy wars, David, but I could tell you the traditional mass saved my priesthood. It's as simple as that, you know, and I want all priests to experience that love. And to be honest with you, if we were going to truly be what Pope Benedict says, the hermeneutics of continuity, and by your mind, I don't necessarily agree with everything that he says on that. And that's fine because he wasn't speaking infallibly. And he's the first one to tell you that, is that why wouldn't you want to learn the traditional mass? Because it would help you celebrate the Novus Ordo better. You know, I mean, but what's amazing is you have all these people like now this trad recovery conference and stuff, you know, it's just basically, nope, No, all we need is Vatican II and everything that came after Vatican II. It's just like, I said this when Traditionis Custodis came out. There are cranks on both sides.
Okay? Yeah.
There
yeah.
are like, cranks like in the trad extreme world.
Extreme elements on like yeah. both sides. He's like extremes. Oh, yeah. Like, calm well, down.
Yeah. Oh, I know. I mean, let me tell you something. When people tell me that Father Flager and his ilk are in full union with the church, but a society of Pius X priest isn't, I'm going, well, wait a second now. I'm looking at it externally. It doesn't look like that to me. Can we have a conversation about that? And that's what I was always about. And some say I might have been naive on that. I was trying to root out the cranks and try to bring together those that were best of both worlds. And, you know, to be fair, I haven't really studied one because you have pretty long podcasts, so I haven't gotten through all of them. But, you know, I haven't really gotten through Kennedy or yours argument. I'm hoping to at some point. But I think you're both honest men. We've had both of you at our conferences before, especially in June, you know, and if there is any misunderstanding, I think it's best hashed out over debate. And, you know, because as long as we can keep a conversation going, I think it in the end helps everyone. We might still walk away disagreeing, but we better know where we're coming from. And I think what we're seeing, especially now in the reign of Francis, since COVID, since Traditionis Custodis, I think we're starting to see, and I'm not a society priest, but I'm going to tell you, I think there's a lot more appreciation for what Archbishop Lefebvre started and did. And we might not all agree with everything that he did, but we're starting to see the visionary and maybe even the prophet that he was in all of this. And you know, as long as we keep that open mind, but what I'm going to tell you right now, when people say to me, well, you know, at my parish, everything's going great. Well, not everyone's at your parish, and kudos for you, but not everyone's there. There's a vast wasteland out there. And I'm going to tell you this. You're from, is it Cincinnati or Cleveland? I can't remember. I know you're a Browns fan.
Much closer to Cleveland.
And I'm sorry about that, about being a Browns fan. So, but, you know, I'm going to tell you this right now. I grew up in one of the most vibrant dioceses the world has ever seen, not just our country, the Archdiocese of Chicago. And to seeing it being shuttered in my lifetime. When I was born, there were over 400 parishes. Mm-hmm. And Cardinal Supich, you know, gleefully is hoping to get that down to 200 by next year. Why is that a good thing? Why is closing parishes a good thing? It does, or closing schools a good thing? It makes absolutely no sense to me. And I'm sorry if I'm preaching a little bit there, but I haven't talked too much on social media. If I can say, you know, just at the end here is, I said at the beginning, you know, we learn who our friends are. You know, I've been very disappointed how much of Catholic media has been silent on this. And Anthony Stein, who I think has done excellent coverage on of this at, I think his podcast is Restored to Tradition. You know, he's done excellent coverage of this and trying to be fair. But, you know, I'm disappointed, John Henry Weston. I'm disappointed other Catholic news agencies have not tried to just unbiasedly investigate this. And I think part of the problem is they're worried again about the Altman mob. They're worried about being attacked and losing viewership. And that's one thing that I always liked about you, David L. Gray, is that you want to get to the truth. So you'll have controversial people on, like E. Michael Jones, all right, like Patrick Coffin, and or you'll go on his show. You'll have me on. I don't know how I'm controversial, but clearly I am, you know, and because you want to get to the truth. You know, and that, again, just to bring it back to Kennedy, I think Kennedy's the same way when we come down to it. So I'm putting it out there, and I'll send Kennedy a message. Everybody would love to host the David L. Gray Kennedy Hall debate. I think it would be a barn burner. So,
yeah,
start growing your beard down, David.
We do miss you. And if you ever needed a platform to podcast on and someone to, you would just send your clips to who would edit them professionally, I'm your guy. So that invitation is always out there. Only thing you need to record and send, and I got you. But as we head out, I was wondering, you know, you're speaking about something that One thing that I did want to get your quick thoughts on, because I know you got a head out, you're a busy man, but you know, people who are concerned about the election cycle, and we noticed recently that, you know, President Trump is going to most likely be the nominee. But recently, you know, he seems to have distanced himself from Catholics on life issues concerning vitro fertilization and concerning where he's at on abortion. Sometimes he's fluid, saying, oh, you know, term limits are probably where we need to be to make a deal with Democrats. You know, maybe 6 months, maybe 16 weeks, you can kill a baby. And now he's saying, oh, maybe it's a state's right issue. Like, we're Catholics who vote, of course, you know, Biden is a non-starter, right? But what are your thoughts on this? How can you help Catholics kind of flush out this whole thing, and where should they be at politically as they engage in a social space and maybe think they can use a vote to elect someone other than Christ being king?
David, it's amazing. First, we're going to have the Altman mob going after me, and then we're going to have the Trump mob going after me. And
You came on the wrong show.
I know.
About subs and likes, you know.
To give credit where credit is due, no other Republican president, in my opinion, would have been able to pull off what Trump did with the Supreme Court and really with the entire federal bench. I mean, I have several Catholic lawyers, traditionalists, who were amazed at his appointments, especially on the lower benches. I mean, he did a remarkable job. Whoever was advising him, I used to know the name and I don't anymore. My forgiveness if he's watching.
But also, does that concern you, though, when you see what happened to Roe Wade and seeing how these people can put abortion in the Constitution in Alabama and probably win? I don't think there's any state in the union where they can't put abortion on a ballot and win, because they have the money, they have the emotions, and Republicans actually don't articulate why we defend life.
So. Yeah, no, they don't. They put their head in the sand. I read a great op-ed this morning on that. And, you know, Trump's wrong. Trump's been wrong on a lot of things. Okay. I mean, it's as simple as this, but most of America, including Catholics, don't have a problem with IVF because they don't understand why the church is against this, morally teaching. You know, they don't understand why we're against contraception. Trump is not Catholic. And so I can understand where he's coming from. And I think there's a part of him that is trying to make a political move not to be bogged down in it. So they can't put it around his neck.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
So that's understandable. We got to keep praying for him. And we have to realize, and I think this is the conversation that we need to have. You want to have a good conversation with traditionalists of goodwill and those that attend the Novus Ordo of goodwill. It's really not so much about the liturgy. It's more about should Christ be king now? Should we stop this idea of a separation of church and state? And realize throughout most of the history of the church, the most successful states or kingdoms, okay, were those that worked with the church and honored the church. Mm-hmm. That's what we need to start really focusing on. Not this, oh, yeah, Christ the king of the universe down the road, you know, when he comes again. No, are we pushing as Catholics of goodwill that Christ should be king of this country and should be proclaimed? I dare say, put in the Constitution that Christ is king. Absolutely. And by the way, sorry if anybody thinks of what I'm saying is anti-Semitic. It ain't. All right. But guess what? I want Ben Shapiro and all of them to become Catholic, because the way I look at it, the way I was taught, there is one faith. Okay. There's only Catholics in heaven, and we have to strive on this planet as a church militant to bring as many people to the truth as that we can. And, you know, if we're not willing to do that, well, may God have mercy on your soul, because our mission, and I don't care if you're a priest, I don't care if you're a man, I don't care if you're a woman, I don't care if you're old, I don't care if you're young, your job is to bring everyone to Christ the King and bend the knee. That is what we're supposed to do, whether it's Donald Trump, Joe Biden, or anyone else. We need to bring them to Christ the King. And so I'm going to say this. Pray for Trump's conversion. Pray for Biden's conversion. And pray for all of our politicians that they start realizing that we can have the attitude that Christ should be king. And it's not a bad thing to say. It's not anti-Semitic. It's not anti-Muslim. It's not anti-anything. It is pro. That is what we have to be. We have to be people that are pro-life, pro-Christ. And it's as simple as that.
Thanks, man. Yeah. Brother Lovell, thanks for coming on back on the show. We miss you. We love you. And would you leave us out with a blessing as you always had done in the past?
Absolutely. And let me just say thank you so much for wearing a decent suit. You do have some things in your closet that I do not approve of, but you look very dapper today, and so I appreciate that. So, that's so funny. We will close with a blessing. Dominus vobiscum. Benedictio Dei omnipotentis patris et filii et spiritus sancti descender super vos maniat semper. Amen. Have a great day, everyone.
Thank you, brother.